views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And this evening, our guest is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And the Institute does support Radio Liberty, and we support their effort to try to educate people about our matchless Constitution. Because the American Constitution is the reason that you and I live as free people in a free society, or at least in what was once a free society. The Constitution was a unique document, unique in all of history, because it limited the power of the government over the lives of the people. It acknowledged that our freedoms came from God. That is where this statement is made in the Declaration of Independence. Our freedoms came from God, and the governments were instituted among men, deriving their power from the consent of the governed to protect those God-given rights. And since they were God-given, they didn't have to be issued by the government. However, they did have a Bill of Rights to basically say, government cannot interfere with any of these, so that nobody could come along and say, well, we initially, of course, we have to, in the name of, of preserving our society, to limit certain speech or certain religions, or no, it said that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or freedom of speech or freedom of the press or of the right to assemble in the redress of their grievances. The right of the people to assemble and redress of their grievances. Congress still passed no law. Didn't say the state wouldn't. Didn't say the local community wouldn't. The Bill of Rights placed limitations on the federal government. Well, Pastor Whitney is going to be taking you through some of the amendments here, as we have in the past, and you really need to, of course, learn about the Constitution so you can pass this message on to generations yet unborn. This idea that men are free when the power of government is limited over the lives of the people. Pastor Whitney, go right ahead. Pastor Whitney, are you there?
Hear me?
Yes, go ahead, David.
Okay. Thank you. It's a privilege to be on your show. And one of the most dangerous things in terms of granting power, and by the way, that's what we the people do through our Constitution, rights come from God. God has given us rights. Government has no rights. People often talk about states' rights. That's really a misnomer. Government has powers, but those powers are only those which we the people have granted to our government. So we the people are the ones that designed it, created it, put it into motion, and we the people are the ones that can change it and alter it. And one of the most dangerous powers that we grant to government is the police powers and the judicial powers to arrest someone, put them on trial, and perhaps incarcerate them, and so on. And as we've discussed, we'll just briefly review the 4th through the 8th Amendments all deal with the protections we have against government abuse of its powers, of its police powers, of its investigative powers in the 4th Amendment, protecting us against unreasonable searches and seizures. That is, they're going to search or seize anything, they must have a warrant signed by a judge indicating there's probable cause that we have committed a crime, and therefore an investigation needs to be done. If that evidence is brought forward and we're charged with having committed a crime, then the Fifth Amendment rights begin to take place. If it's a capital crime, that is, could result in the death penalty, then a grand jury must hear the evidence presented against us before a trial actually takes place.
All right, Fide, you hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney as we explore the various amendments to the Bill of the Constitution, which we call the Bill of Rights. Go right ahead, David.
And so if you are charged with a capital crime, that is a crime that ultimately could result in the death penalty, such as murder or some of the crimes that were clearly in days gone by punishable by death, such as adultery and so on. If you're charged with a capital crime, then the grand jury has to look at the evidence that the government has gathered against you, and these common citizens, there's no special training and whatnot, but these common citizens will determine if there is enough evidence on the part of the government to actually take this to trial, and only if they approve of it, then it goes to trial, and what they hand down is an indictment, not indicating you're guilty or innocent, but simply that there's enough evidence to actually hold a trial. Then you, in the Fifth Amendment, you're protected against double jeopardy, being tried twice by the same jurisdiction for the same event, offense, and also no compulsory self-incrimination. The government cannot force you to testify against yourself, which is what people say when I plead the Fifth. Well, that's what they're talking about, that aspect of the Fifth Amendment that means I cannot be coerced into confessing anything at all. And also the Fifth Amendment protects us from being deprived of our life, our liberty, or our process, or with our property without due process of law. Fundamental judicial fairness there. Also, private property cannot be taken for public use without just compensation. So all those are in that phase if you are charged with a crime. Well, then if you're brought to trial, the Sixth Amendment deals with the rights of criminal defendants. If you're brought to a criminal case, then a speedy trial is guaranteed to you, a public trial, so that it must be fair and arbitrary because the public is able to witness that. Trial by jury of the state and district in which the crime was committed or allegedly committed. You have a right to be informed of the charges against you with sufficient time and particularity to be able to prepare a defense. You have the right to confront and examine any accusers. They have to appear in court to make their accusation. Simply can't remain anonymous. You have the right to subpoena, force people to witness for your defense, and as well the right to assistance of counsel, qualified attorney, at the state's expense if you are unable to afford one. Now, the Seventh Amendment deals with the civil cases. So the Sixth with the criminal, the Seventh with the civil, the right to trial by jury in cases involving common law or more than $20 in terms of what was in dispute, and that states very clearly in the Seventh that the judge cannot substitute his opinion for that finding of the jury. And, the Eighth Amendment then deals with if you are convicted, that is, the trial's held and the jury says guilty.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course David's been taking us through the Fifth and Sixth and Seventh Amendments to the Constitution, and of course the Fifth is is that for criminal? Or is it the Sixth?
Well, actually, it deals with all cases.
Okay.
Really. The rights you have, your personal property rights, and so on, in any court of law.
All right. And the Seventh Amendment?
Seventh deals specifically with civil cases, where the Sixth deals with the criminal case.
All right, and then of course go right ahead
and
with
the
description.
Eighth, of course, deals with the punishment phase. If you are actually found guilty, and the punishment is going to take place, you're protected against excessive bail because you're innocent until proven guilty, and no excessive fines which would be unreasonable considering the nature of the offense were to be permitted, and no cruel and unusual punishment. No torture or disemboweling and mutilation should be permitted as a punishment for any crime committed. And by the way, our founders would never have considered and did not consider capital punishment cruel and unusual. Not unusual at all in their day, and it certainly was not considered cruel, but the tortures that were often conducted in European governments, they considered that is an affront to the image of God made in man. If you're going to execute someone, you need to do it without torturing them to death. So hanging in their day was very common. But the current modern objection to capital punishment is completely contrary to the findings and the beliefs of our founding fathers. And then we step out of the judicial system when we come to the 9th and 10th Amendments. And these are extremely important amendments. The 9th reads that the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not, very strong, shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. You see, one of the objections to even having a Bill of Rights at the convention, the Constitutional Convention, Alexander Hamilton objected that, you know, a Bill of Rights could be dangerous because all of the rights could not possibly list it. So if you were to sit down this afternoon and evening and write out all your rights, your God-given rights, you might miss some. And it might be assumed if there is a Bill of Rights that any rights that you didn't secure by that Bill of Rights were forfeited to the government. So a future government might assume that all rights not listed were forfeited and you did not have them. And so Hamilton said, you know, a Bill of Rights, that's kind of a dangerous thing. So to satisfy that objection that others felt strongly, Madison offered this, the 9th Amendment, that the enumeration in the Constitution of these rights that are listed here in the Bill of Rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage other rights that are retained by the people. And, of course, a key word here is retained. The 9th Amendment does not give courts the authority to create new rights, although our courts certainly have practiced this distorted and improper interpretation. For example, Roe v. Wade is an example of inventing a new right. They invented a right for a woman to murder her unborn child by contract killer, to hire an abortionist to murder her unborn child. That's not a right in our founder's sense of understanding, because it's wrong. It's not right. It's very simple. How do you know we're right from wrong? You look to God's law, and God's law says, thou shalt not murder. And it's very clear in God's law that the taking of the life of an unborn child is murder. You're taking the life of a human being made in the image of God. Therefore, the 9th Amendment does not say that any new rights can be invented by the judiciary. For example, more recently here than Roe v. Wade is the case of Lawrence v. Texas, where the Supreme Court basically said all sodomites have the right to practice sodomy. And that was a shocking decision on their part, because that's not right, it's wrong. And where do we get the standard from? Our founders say the standard is not what some black-robed tyrant says it is. A black-robed tyrant cannot determine what's right and wrong. What's right and wrong is given to us by the author of law itself, that is, the creator of the universe, God Almighty. It is God Almighty who gives us the law, the supreme law of the universe. This is what's right, this is what's wrong, and it's very clear in God's law that sodomy is an abomination. It's one of the most detestable crimes. Our founders called it a crime against nature. That's the terms they used, a crime against nature. So how do those supreme idiots in black robes say, oh, well, sodomy is not a crime at all? Well, they do so by rejecting the very foundation of law in our land. These people are lawless, which is kind of ironic. These people who think they are making law, nine black-robed tyrants, they're not making law at all. They're violating the law, and they should be punished for that violation, which, as our Constitution said, would mean they would be impeached by a legislature that had any guts to it whatsoever, would impeach these wicked men.
Well, I think that, David, the significant thing was actually the part of that decision of Lawrence versus Texas was based upon, well, over in Europe, they're saying that, you know, that homosexuality is perfectly all right. So as long as they're doing it in Europe, we ought to do it here. Now, our judges were supposed to interpret our Constitution based upon the thought process of the men who wrote our Constitution. And they knew that full well, but they had a political agenda. This is judicial activism, and just as they wanted the unborn children killed, so they want to legalize sodomy, which is what they did. And until we understand that we have judges who do not believe in the Constitution, who do not want to be suddenly limited by God's law, they want to rewrite our way of life. And the reason that they do the things that they do, in my opinion, is they are engaged, many of our Supreme Court justices are engaged in an organized effort to undermine the Judeo-Christian faith upon which all of our laws were originally based. So go right ahead, David.
And they're doing a very effective job, an evil job, no doubt, of doing that, directly undermining. And that's the thing that's so hard, I think, for many Americans to understand. They see whatever these people issue, you know, whatever the federal government says, well, that's the law of the land. No, it is not. The supreme law of the land is our United States Constitution, Bill of Rights, subsequent amendments, and our Declaration of Independence. That's the supreme law of the land. Above and superior to the supreme law of the land is God's law, which basically our law originally was founded upon. So if God says, thou shalt not murder, our law says, thou shalt not murder. If God's law says, thou shalt not steal, our law says, thou shalt not steal, etc. So it was God's law that was the foundation. And therefore, the Ninth Amendment has been abused because it's been used by people who have a wicked and evil intent to destroy our constitutional republic. It has been used to basically say they have a right to invent new rights. No, you can't do that. Only the rights that were already recognized, only the rights that were protected under then-existing English common law and American common law were to be included in this statement that this Constitution does not cannot be construed to deny or disparage other rights retained by the people. Those other rights are the rights that you have under English common law. It's interesting, here in the state of Maryland, our Constitution actually goes further in making it very clear. It says that any resident of the state of Maryland has secured to them English common law. They have the right to English common law as it existed on July 4th, 1776. And we know exactly what it existed as at that point because William Blackstone's famous commentaries on the laws of England had been in circulation for almost 20 years at that point in time, and everybody looked to that. For 150 years of American jurisprudence, they looked to Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England as the authority. If you could quote Blackstone in support of your case, you just about won it every single time in American court of law. Because English common law was the basis of American common law, and that was the basis of our foundation as a nation, the basis of our law. And it's only been in the last, a little more than 100 years, they've been chipping away at that basic common law foundation to create, what is a lawless society, although they would not present it as that. God's word says it's lawless because it's violating His law, and whenever you violate His law, you become lawless, that is, an outlaw against God's law. So that's what the Ninth Amendment does. It secures for us a safety that the government cannot come and take away any of our God-given rights. They have no right to do that, no power to do that, because we the people are the ones who created our government. We the people are the ones who granted powers to our government. And but, we, the people, are the ones who have the rights that have been given to us by God.
But you know, David, it's interesting now in the name of course, fighting the wicked terrorists, why we've got to start taking the freedoms away from the American people. And right after, of course, the anthrax attack here in America, shortly after 9/11, when two Democratic senators, opponents of the would-be opponents of the Patriot Act, got their anthrax letters, and then, of course, the media got their anthrax letters, and people in Congress were just scared to death, and they slammed through the Patriot Act, wouldn't even let the people read it, but who could be against patriotism? And of course, the Patriot Act began to limit all of these freedoms we had, in the name of course, protecting us from the wicked Osama bin Laden.
Yes, and basically the Patriot Act and Patriot Act II have driven a stake through the Fourth Amendment right to be secure in your persons and papers, and it's just unconscionable what they have done in the name of protecting us. And Benjamin Franklin said, anybody who sacrifices their liberty for some security deserves neither.
And I think it's
liberty
so important.
Nor security.
I think it's important that people understand that Bill Clinton tried to get much of this legislation through after the Oklahoma City bombing, and Congress wouldn't go for it. But of course, after the 9/11 bombing, and then you know, the anthrax letters sent to the Democrats. Why, of course, the Congress and the Senate simply knuckled under and accepted this legislation. And I don't know that any member of Congress had actually read it. They were not allowed to read it. It was given to them in the morning. They were told they were going to vote on it in the afternoon. Why? Because there are people who want a dictatorship in America. People who have a different agenda, because they dream a different dream, and they worship a different God. Go right ahead there, David.
Stepping from the Ninth Amendment to the Tenth Amendment, here's another extremely important amendment that is basically ignored in Washington, D.C.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
document that limits the power of the federal government's authority over the individual. But there have always been, down through the ages, those who would lust after power. And little bit by little bit, as part of an organized effort, they've progressively eroded the limitations placed on the power of the federal government. As Thomas Jefferson said, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Well, of course, what they have done is they've taken the chains off of government and they're forcing them to put on the people. There really are people who want a dictatorship in America, and many of these people smile at you and tell you how much they love freedom, and but of course we have to give up some of our freedom, because if we don't, why, the wicked Osama bin Laden will come over from his cave and take away our freedom. That's why we have to give up our freedom now. Go ahead, David.
Well, that just reminds me of not only did the Patriot Act do enormous damage to our freedoms by killing the Fourth Amendment, basically. By the way, that means the Patriot Act is illegal. It is unconstitutional. It is not the law of the land. And anyone who's taken an oath before Almighty God, and that's what an oath is, anybody who's taken an oath before Almighty God and obeys the Patriot Act rather than obeying the Fourth Amendment is going to have hell to pay on Judgment Day. That's right, because God is going to hold them accountable. They took an oath before Him to uphold the Constitution, and here they are violating the Constitution by obeying the Patriot Act rather than by obeying the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. And when we come, as we already talked about, the Fifth and Sixth and Seventh and Eighth Amendment protecting you in the criminal justice system, well, those have also been killed effectively by the Warner Military Commissions Act. No, not Warner, it's the Military Commissions Act, which has basically said all they have to do is determine that for whatever reason they think you're an enemy of the state, which, you know, somebody like me telling you the truth here about the Constitution might be considered an enemy of the state because I am opposing the wicked violation of our Constitution by those in power in Washington, D.C. So if they determine that I'm an enemy, in their terms of whatever that means, an enemy, they can completely strip me of my Fifth Amendment rights, Sixth Amendment rights, Seventh Amendment rights, and Eighth Amendment rights. And they have done that to American citizens right now in our day, which indicates what they intend to do to more American citizens who resist the tyranny that they are building, the dictatorship of the New World Order. Anybody that resists it, ultimately, they're going to label as an enemy and treat them as if they have no Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth Amendment rights, which means, again, these are lawbreakers. They are violating the supreme law of the land and getting away with it because Americans do not know the supreme law of the land, and they are not willing, or apathetic at least, about holding their elected officials accountable to this law that every elected official has taken an oath before Almighty God to uphold this. And anybody that claims to be a Christian who's in Washington, D.C., in an elected position or an appointed position, ought to be reminded very frequently by those who voted for them or those who hold them accountable in their districts around the country, ought to be reminded of the solemn nature of the oath that they have taken, and that any action on their part to violate this Constitution, they may think they're getting away with something, oh, but there's going to be hell to pay on Judgment Day for those individuals, because God will never let them get away with violating their oath, and they had better repent, and repent quickly before it is too late, and their soul is sent to eternal hell. They better repent and do the works of repentance. And Scripture speaks of the works of repentance, and of course that's to do the right thing, and to stop doing the wrong thing, to stop violating the Constitution, learn what the Constitution truly says, and make every action on the part of the federal government back in line, back within the limits of our Constitution.
And it's really very interesting, David, that recently we could limit pornography and these vile and detestable things at the state and the local level. That was allowed. It was the federal government that limited the ability of the local governments to be able to take action against the pornographers and the other people who were involved in a planned program to destroy the morality of our people. And believe me, there is a planned program to do it. And as a result, America has turned away from God, and these dark forces have infiltrated the churches, Catholic Church, Protestant church, Jewish religion, and they are there today eroding the very moral foundation of the society, and I fear that if God is just, his justice will not sleep forever. We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, talking about our precious, our priceless Constitution. Well, David, go right ahead with this discussion of the we were going through the Ninth Amendment. Are we ready for the Tenth Amendment?
Yes. And so the Tenth Amendment really is a cornerstone of freedom, and our founders clearly understood this. They set in concrete here in the Tenth Amendment this view of a covenantal nature of government. Government only has such power as we, the people, delegated to it. And the way in which we delegate the power to the government is through the Constitution. So basically what happens when the government, the civil government, violates the Constitution, they're violating the contract we have entered into it, and they're acting outside of the powers that we have granted to them. And basically then they have become a criminal class, and they need to be dealt with as a criminal class and brought to justice and prevented from ever again violating this precious covenant that we have entered into. And so the powers not delegated to the United States, and those are very limited, as Federalist 45 says, the powers that we are granting to our federal government are supposed to be restricted and limited. The state governments are wide-ranging. But those powers delegated to the United States are only the ones listed in the Constitution. They have no other powers beyond that. And boy, would it be a blessing to every freedom-loving American if our federal government were to return within the boundaries established by the Constitution. I've said before that, in a sense, the Constitution's like a playing field. Seven articles of the Constitution are like a ball field. But around that ball field is a high and thick wall, which is called the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the Constitution. And that wall was designed to prevent the federal government from playing outside of the field that was defined by the seven articles of the Constitution and restricted by the 10 articles of the Bill of Rights. The problem is, since the Bill of Rights was ratified, just about every subsequent amendment to our Constitution has punched a hole in that wall, created an open door, a gate that just allows the civil government in Washington, D.C., freely to go beyond the boundaries that we established. And most of these, there's a few exceptions, but most of these amendments to the Constitution actually do the opposite of the Bill of Rights. They expand government power and give much more unsafe powers to the federal government. And that's why ever since the time of our founders, our federal government has grown gargantuan in size and exploded in the last century. In the 20th century, the growth of the federal government is just astonishing in contrast with how it was kept mostly within the boundaries during the 19th century. Well, the First Amendment...
Hold that thought, David. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And, of course, we've just been talking about the 10th Amendment, which specifically stipulates that if a power is not specifically granted to Congress by the states, that is to be limited to the states and to the people. But and the Congress has no authority in those fields if anything that has not been specifically granted authority to consider or to act on. Now, David, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners about the Institute of the Constitution, how they can get a home kit, and, of course, how about your website.
Yes, one of the things that we recognize is that many people feel rather intimidated by the idea of learning about the Constitution or communicating these truths to others. So we put together what we call a host kit, which is a series of 12 DVD lectures, or you can also get them on VHS if you need that format. But these 12 lectures walk you through the history, the philosophical beliefs, the religious beliefs of our founding fathers, the biblical worldview that was the basis for their structuring our federal government, and actually even the state governments as well. And then Dr. Eisenman in those lectures walks you through an understanding, a working understanding of the Declaration, of the Constitution, and then of the Bill of Rights, as well as the 17 subsequent amendments to the Bill of Rights, and gives you a working knowledge which is really essential if you are going to function as a Christian citizen in this land. If you want to be a citizen who really helps bring us back to the freedom that was established by our founders, you need to have an understanding of these things. And the Host Kit is a very simple way to do that. Anyone, with any group of people anywhere, can actually use this kit to communicate these truths. And we encourage people to gather a group of friends and neighbors maybe in their living room, or definitely take it to churches. Churches are the most frequent place where our Host Kit is being used all across America, all in 50 states. There's classes being conducted right now as people are learning these truths. And I had the privilege with Michael Peruca this past legislative session here in Annapolis, Maryland, to teach this to state senators and state delegates, who many of the aspects of what we taught them, they were very surprised by. They had never heard this. One individual had graduated from law school years ago and never cracked open, never studied the Constitution itself in law school, so was very surprised to find what was revealed by a simple reading and studying of the Constitution. So people can get a hold and purchase our Host Kit by going to our web store if they want to purchase it that way. And our website is IOTC, which stands for Institute on the Constitution, IOTConline.com. That website, again, is IOTConline.com. Or if they prefer to call toll-free and order a Host Kit, they can do that by calling us at 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again is 866-730-9796. And tell them that you heard it on Dr. Stan and you want to get a Host Kit because you want to begin taking back our republic from the tyrants who have taken over. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take the average grassroots Americans saying, I'm not going to allow my God-given rights to be violated, trampled upon, and stripped away from me by the tyrants who are currently running our country. I'm not going to permit that. And the way to do that is to gather together a grassroots movement of millions of Americans who, once they understand the Constitution and demand of their elected officials that they abide by it or be removed from office, we will see changes take place in our land.
And I think that's really so important to understand that this is taking place all across America. In all 50 states now, classes have been or are being held where people are learning about the Constitution. This information has been carefully suppressed here. The last thing that those who would establish a dictatorship want is for the American people to learn about this amazing document that people throughout the world have always tried to simulate, but nobody has ever been able to capture the real spirit of this, because there were always people with special interests who wanted to look after, they wanted freedom for themselves, but they always wanted to use government so they could take advantage of others. And that's what's wrong with power. One group, certainly the group that wants can put the most pressure on, will use the government so that they can defeat their adversaries, and so that people who want the high tariffs on their goods but no tariff on everybody else's goods, people who want to be able to certainly exploit the workers, or the workers who want to be able to exploit government, or one competitor wants to be able to keep his competition from being able to get an edge on him. A perfect example of that would be the oil companies, which finance the environmental movement so that their competitors would not be able to drill for oil, for natural gas in the United States in the name of, oh, we can't have that sort of thing here. Why, of course, it would lead to pollution and environmental degradation. Or certainly we can't have nuclear power. We've got to not have nuclear power, because we might have an atomic explosion. We don't know what to do with the spent nuclear fuel. And by controlling the media, and then, of course, controlling the government through these pressure groups like the environmentalists, why you're able to stifle competition. And it's really worked very, very effectively. But that was not how our system was supposed to work. The power over the government was to be limited. They were not having to do with the environment. They were not to be able to favor one group over another. And the people were to be free. What a unique idea. But this is being taught all across America, and those people who work with the Institute of the Constitution become part of a growing army of Americans who want to take America back while there still may be time. So pick up the story there, David.
Amen. Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, when we step into the 11th Amendment, the First Amendment beyond the Bill of Rights, it speaks about lawsuits against states, and it arose out of a particular case, Chisholm v. the state of Georgia, and this was a case in which this individual had a contract with the state of Georgia, but he was not a citizen of the state of Georgia. He didn't reside in Georgia. If I remember correctly, I think he was in South Carolina. And the contract was violated, or he believed some aspects of that contract was violated, and so he took it to court, and of course, any court in Georgia, him being not a citizen, did not smile kindly on him or on his case against the state of Georgia, so he took it ultimately to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court handed down their opinion, which is all the Supreme Court can do. It's just an opinion. It was interesting to see the response of the state of Georgia, which indicates very clearly, and this was in the year 1793, the state of Georgia clearly understood that the federal government could do certain things, and there was plenty of other things it could not do. And this was one of the things that it could not do. It could not enforce its decision in this case. And so basically the state of Georgia said, yeah, sure, the Supreme Court issued their opinion. Let them come down here and enforce it. The first person who comes to enforce that court opinion of the Supreme Court of the United States, the first person that crosses the state border of Georgia to enforce that is going to be hung. That's right.
In other words, they felt that the citizen should have the right to sue the state of Georgia for the abrogation of the contract. Is that right?
Right. That is of another state. If
right.
you were a citizen of the state of Georgia, you could sue the state of Georgia. But if you were not a citizen of the state of Georgia from another state, you know, you didn't have permission to sue the state of Georgia. Well, it's a debate whether they're right or wrong, but what was clear here is this amendment arose as a result of that states may not be sued in federal court by citizens of another jurisdiction without that state's consent. So basically, it's given the states a free ride whenever someone forms a contract with that state if they are a citizen of a different state. So it's giving an advance and an expansive power to the states that may not be wise, because after all, if you form a contract, it should be your word is good, and you're going to fulfill that contract. And whether this was good or bad or not, it's interesting to see what it is. Definitely, is an expansion of government power. In this case, of the state's power to violate their contract if they've entered a contract with someone who's not a citizen of their state. So that's the 11th Amendment. Ratified in 1798, 5 years after the court case was handed down by the Supreme Court. But the interesting thing about the history of this is it indicates that Georgia understood that they didn't have to bow to the Supreme Court of the United States. They were going to hang anybody that comes to try to enforce the Supreme Court of the United States' decision. Now, we may not agree with Georgia's position, but the interesting thing is that the states of that day were glad and willing and even eager to stand up against the federal government and say, you can only do certain things and other things you're not permitted to do. States today are very, 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 very cautious about ever criticizing or ever standing up against the federal government. Why? Because now they are tied by all kinds of financial benefits to the federal government, all kinds of money and flows into each state from the federal government. Of course, it's taken from the states, the people of those states originally, before the federal government doesn't have any money of its own. It has to steal it from the people and then give it back to the states. But when it comes back to the states, it comes with all kinds of control and strings attached, and that has silenced the states in doing what they are designed to do, resist the expansion and the violation of by the federal government of our Constitution. It was the states that were going to guard against expanding the powers of the federal government. And so Georgia was an example of a state that was willing to stand against the federal government in that day as an example of what should take place if we can return our country to a constitutional republic. Well, the 12th Amendment actually came as a result of a very interesting presidential race in the year 1800. It was a several, there was a number of people running together, and there was a tie, actually, that wound up in, a very interesting story, wound up in Congress being settled, and up until that point in time, up until the 12th Amendment, the way vice presidents were chosen is they're the ones who came in second in the race. Here's a case, there's a race, I think, of four people running. John Adams, who was president, sitting president at the time, Thomas Jefferson, Aaron Burr, and so on. And Aaron Burr and Jefferson got into a tie, and the tie was resolved in Congress. But the way a vice president was chosen is he's the one that came in second in terms of the electoral votes cast. So if the majority went for, take the last election, say the majority of the votes went for Bush, he became the president. The next down would have been, Kerry. So Kerry would have been the vice president of Bush. That's how the system was set up. And because of the closeness of that 1800 race and the divisiveness and so on, they realized, it's not really a good way to work to have the vice president, the one who was running against the president. And we saw that also in that 1800 election, in that Thomas Jefferson was actually the sitting vice president of John Adams, who was president at the time. So Thomas Jefferson was running against his, what we think of as a running mate. He was running against the President of the United States, and he was the vice president. So that kind of, the change that took place there in the 12th Amendment was basically that electors were going to cast a vote for the president. They would cast the same vote for a person on the presidential ticket, so that the president would have a vice president running with him on the ticket, and electors would cast votes for vice president and president together rather than separately being elected as they were up to that point in time. So there's some wisdom in that. That's probably one of the few of the 17 amendments that was good, and we could say, that one's probably worth retaining. Moving quite a few years later, 61 years later, before the next ratified amendment, it was the 13th Amendment. Of course, this was at the close of the war between the states, or perhaps even a better title for that war is the War to Prevent Southern Independence. That's exactly what it did. The South was doing what we as a nation had done with Great Britain. We declared independence in our declaration. Said, we're no longer part of your system. You violated our God-given rights and so on, laid out there in the Declaration of Independence. Well, the South basically said the same thing. You violated the Constitution, and yes, there were some grievances that they had. And it wasn't just slavery, that's a misnomer, but there were some grievances they had of violations that were growing and being practiced in the North and so on that, indicated a direction that if it was not checked, that direction would lead to a vastly expanded federal government, exactly what we have seen subsequent to that war to prevent Southern independence.
I think it's so important, though, that people understand that the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery. In fact, the Emancipation Proclamation wasn't passed, I think, until 1862. And that was simply passed not because Lincoln wanted to do with the way with slavery, but there were massive draft riots there. In the North, there had been riots against the draft that killed almost 2,000 people in those draft riots. The people in the North didn't want to go and fight in this foolish war. They knew it was all about economics. It was all about protecting the tariffs and position of people in the North. And, of course, what they didn't understand is the part that the international financiers were playing and flaring up the tempers on both sides, both in the North and the South, because there were people outside this country who wanted a genocidal war, and that's exactly what happened. And the idea that most people today really believe the Civil War was fought over slavery simply reflects the degree of control that exists today of what the American people think. And Lincoln actually freed the slaves in the South, but he couldn't free them because they were still held by the Southerners. But he did not free any of the slaves in the North, where he could have, because he had jurisdiction. So he freed the slaves in the South and did nothing, and he didn't free the slaves in the North because he was not against slavery. This war was not fought against about slavery, and the fact that most people believe that shows how effective the control is over our thought process. Go ahead, David.
Well, the 13th Amendment, like you said, the Emancipation Proclamation really didn't free slaves, but the 13th Amendment did abolish slavery. And in its early understanding, that's all it did. Early courts, that is the courts following 1865, ruled that the 13th Amendment simply abolished the institution of slavery. It did not affect any forms of segregation. It did not affect discrimination. It didn't say anything about that. Not that those were right or wrong. That was not the issue dealt with. For example, a civil rights case that was brought before the U.S. Supreme Court in 1883 clearly held that all the 13th Amendment did was simply abolish the institution of slavery. But there was a dissenting opinion to that 1883 Supreme Court decision. It was Justice Harlan. He argued that the 13th Amendment did more than abolish slavery as an institution. He said it also abolished the badges and incidents of slavery that are reminiscent of the slavery era, such as segregation and so on. And so his was a dissenting opinion, though, in 1883. It wasn't until 1968 that his dissenting opinion became the majority view in Jones v. Mayer, Supreme Court decision, in which said segregation and all forms of discrimination from the federal position were unconstitutional. Now, this is an interesting thing. This is the federal government dictating to the states what they could and could not do, and that, again, is a violation of our structure, of the states having these powers and the federal government having to butt out on these issues.
And, of course, the thing is, if you want to change the Constitution, amend it, and get the support of the people. But what they want to do this is by judicial edict rather than by the will of the people. There is an elite, they have an agenda, and they're using it very effectively. Well, David, go right ahead. Now we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
The 13th Amendment also has a most damaging and dangerous statement in it, and it's the final statement that says, Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Now notice what this does. This vastly expands federal power at the expense of the states as well as of the individual rights, because it says, whatever Congress determines it needs to pass in terms of a piece of legislation to enforce this, it can do that, which is why we have all the kind of civil rights legislation today, which takes away an individual's freedom to determine, well, who's going to rent their property, who's going to do this or that, or who's they're going to hire. All of these civil rights issues have become forced upon the states and the individuals because the federal government has given itself permission to expand its powers. And again, this is a very dangerous statement, that Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. And it doesn't just appear in the 13th Amendment. It appears also in the 14th Amendment, in the 15th Amendment, in the 18th and 19th and the 23rd and the 24th and the 26th. So you see all these ways in which the federal government is given permission to expand its powers. And had the American people of those days known what was going to result from passing this amendment, allowing this to become the law of the land, they would never have gone down this route of giving a blank check, basically, a legislative blank check to our federal government. Go ahead and do whatever you think is necessary in order to accomplish this goal. That's an extremely dangerous thing, and I believe it's a mistake. And while I might think certain aspects of the 13th Amendment are fine and could remain on the books, this definitely should not remain on the books. This should be abolished in all of those. The 13th, 14th, 15th, 18th, 19th, 23rd, 24th, and 26th Amendment should abolish that phrase, that Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. As the result is very clear, the federal government has abolished and abused its restrictions and the design that we had that protected us from a tyrannical government. We are under that kind of tyrannical government today because they refuse to really follow the intent of the 13th Amendment, the intent of all these other amendments, which was never to grant them this kind of blank check power, but to see that they could do very fine and very restricted things.
And I think it's so important that people understand the very spirit of which our Constitution is written. Mm-hmm. And let me once again recommend the Institute of the Constitution. What's your telephone number again, David?
Our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number is 866-730-9796.
Bye-bye, and good night.
God bless you, Dr. David.
Bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we hope many of you will give serious consideration to getting a kit from the Institute of the Constitution and setting up a study group in your community so they can begin to educate the American people about the benefits of understanding our Constitution and trying to take America back while we still can. It is because of the violation of the Constitution and the progressive expansion of the federal law that we're in the situation we are today, where, of course, the vast majority of the American people want us to get out of the war in the Middle East and bring our boys home, whether immediately or in very short order. But the administration intends to leave them there indefinitely, and they intend to expand the war and bring us into a conflict with the entire Muslim world. This is what's the next thing on the agenda. It's very obvious from everything that's going on today. This is the real agenda behind what's going on. It doesn't matter what the American people want. It doesn't even matter what many of our elected representatives want. There are forces at work in our society that have been working for almost two centuries to abrogate the Constitution and bring us into this situation where we are today, where we're about to see the clash of civilizations between the Christian West and the, of course, of the Muslim world. And believe me, it is not going to be very pleasant. Well, how do we understand this? Well, you need to understand what happened on 9/11. We, of course, put together three pamphlets on that. It's called Foreknowledge 9/11. You can read my articles in my newsletter, August, September, October, November, December. They're up on the Internet. That's August, September, October, November, December. They're up on the Internet. We recommend them to you and pull them down, bind them, and distribute them. And then to put things into perspective, you need to see my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, or read the book by that title. And then, of course, the next step along the way, The Forbidden Secret. It's a talk we gave in January before we'd ever heard of Rhonda Burns and of course, the program which she is presenting, which has been endorsed by Oprah Winfrey and Larry King and Jim Carrey and Jack Canfield, Chicken Soup for the Soul, fame. This idea of the law of attraction. And we, of course, without even understanding the law of attraction, explain everything that Rhonda Burns will tell you. That much of what she says is absolutely true. Except for the fact that you do not want to access the beings from the other dimension, because this is exactly what you're doing. And the original version of the DVD, The Secret that Rhonda put out, was, of course, the narration by a man named Mrs. Hicks. And Mrs. Hicks, of course, channels Abraham, who's a demonic spirit. And, of course, he will take over and possess her, and people pay $195 to come to the seances when she has Abraham, of course, giving his pronouncements. And there really is another realm. There is a spiritual realm, and you need to be introduced to it. You need to know it's there, and you need to realize, of course, the only protection you have against it is your personal relationship with our Lord. So let me suggest Brotherhood of Darkness, The Forbidden Secret, and then to put things into perspective, Chris Pinto's wonderful DVDs entitled Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, and then, of course, his subsequent one, Riddles in Stone, and then Pastor Joe Simmel's. They sold their souls for rock and roll, because, of course, it deals with the music industry, and Joe himself was demonically possessed for a time until he realized that he was demonically possessed and gave his life to the Lord. And of course, he's a minister today, but he's done a magnificent job in these DVDs. They sold their souls for rock and roll. You'll never look at the world through the same eyes after seeing them. And of course, there's so much more. You can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. But understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And of course, this evening we have a special guest, Scott Lively. And Scott is a very courageous young man who's certainly been trying for some years to educate the American people about the homosexual agenda here in the United States. Now, a lot of people don't like to think of the homosexual or gay agenda, but of course that agenda is the dominant force in our society, to the point where even General Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a couple of weeks ago, when he said that homosexuality was immoral, was immediately attacked and vilified, and he backed down, he apologized for what he said. But of course he did not retract what he said. He said he wished he hadn't said it, but he agreed with that statement. Here's the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he can't even say that homosexuality is immoral. Well, of course it's immoral, because that's what God's law says it is. But people are afraid to speak out today. And so Scott has been working here in the United States for a long time and has written extensively on this. We carry a couple of Scott's books, but actually, we're very, very fortunate to have him tonight, because he's on his way overseas. He's going to be going to Europe on a... How long are you going to be gone, Scott?
7 months.
And you're all booked up for that seven-month period?
Yes, we're going to be in about 6 to 10 different countries, depending on how the schedule goes. But we're mostly in the former Soviet bloc.
And, of course, they're concerned about the spread of immorality there, aren't they?
Yes, and it's a very interesting situation. We have the homosexual movement has been exporting its agenda outside the United States for quite some time. You know, in Europe, they were going apace with the U.S., and now both the United States and the EU are sending their activists into other countries around the world, following a game plan that they really perfected here in the United States, and they're starting to push their way into the former Soviet Union. They've already knocked down quite a number of countries. They've been pushing their way into South America. Now Brazil has gone very far into the homosexual camp. South Africa has fallen recently, and of course most of Western Europe, Canada, they're making inroads into Australia. But the place where we stand the best chance of being able to stop this, what seems to be a steamroller, is in the former Soviet Union. The communists, the one good thing that they did is they prevented the sexual revolution from affecting, for the most part, the countries that were under their control. And so, when the communist governments fell about 15 years ago, the people there remained strongly pro-family, had healthy relationships between men and women, and it really presents the best chance that we have in the world of stopping the homosexual agenda in several countries, and then beginning to roll it back in the places that it's gained the power that it has.
Now, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is a thankless job. I did a video many years ago. It was called The Gay Agenda. And, you know, we got literally hundreds of obscene telephone calls. We were targeted for daring to speak out. And, of course, with that, the video did, of course, alter the course of events. And it brought in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell a program, but it was a very expensive price to pay, and Scott's paid that price, and he's going to continue paying it. Well, Scott, you go ahead, and how did it happen that you got this invitation? Because this is going to be an expensive proposition.
Well, actually, it's very interesting. You know, some of your listeners may recall shows that I've done with you in the past, and it's really been 18 years that my ministry has been focused on opposing the homosexual political agenda. And along the way, I became an attorney, and I now have a doctor of theology as well. I have special training in international human rights, and I've dedicated to opposing the agenda. And then in 2003, the movement, our pro-family movement, got set back about 20 years when the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Bowers versus Hardwick in the Lawrence versus Texas case, and took away the right of states to criminalize sodomy, which really, although many people didn't want, even on our side, didn't want to defend sodomy laws because they're so out of step with the, you know, the sexual, what the results of the sexual revolution in our country. Sodomy laws represented, or the right of states to criminalize sexual conduct in the public interest, was essential to being able to stop the homosexual agenda here, because we, before when Bowers was in place, we could differentiate between the state of mind, you know, called sexual orientation, versus sexual conduct, and be able to say, sure, you know, do what you want to in the privacy of your bedroom, as long as it isn't impacting the public health, and that we are just simply not going to allow you to advocate your lifestyle in the public because of the consequences of sexual behavior, homosexual behavior. Well, when that was struck down in 2003, I really had a tremendous struggle with that, and got very depressed, realized we'd been set back. I went into private practice, law practice, for about 3 years, and then doing that, and you know, sort of being out of the main activist stream, I began feeling very, very dry. Watching the unfolding of this, this is a spiritual war globally that's taking place. The homosexual movement is a satanic movement. It is as forceful in its attack on Christianity as Islam, perhaps even more so, because it's attacking from within, formerly Christian societies, and I was watching all this, feeling that I really was ready to sign up for another tour of duty, as it were.
Hold that thought. We'll be right with this, Scott.
Okay.
Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and Scott was just telling us how it was that he's going to be taking this 7 or 8 month trip over to Eastern Europe and trying to teach people how to stop this social degradation which is in process today. Because, as Scott points out, this is really a satanic movement. There is a spiritual component to everything that's going on, and specifically in the homosexual movement, and I certainly concur. And so he was telling us how he got so burnt out after a period of time that he just gave up and started to practice law, went to practice law for 3 years, and I know just how he feels, because it was in the early 1970s when I stopped my activities, and for 3 years I went to South Africa and practiced medicine, had a wonderful time, you know, there at Sydney, away from all the trials and tribulations of what was going on in society. But, you know, I came back because I felt called to, and I think Scott is coming back, came back because he feels called to do something. America's morality is under attack today. There is an effort to destroy the morality of our country, but not just America. The whole world is under attack today. Christian civilization is under attack today. And believe me, if we don't reclaim, you know, our virtue as a nation, I believe that God is going to bring his vengeance on this nation and on the nations of the world. And we're going to see the greatest conflict and conflagration that the world has ever seen, and literally hundreds of millions of people are going to be destroyed. Because, you know, the fear of the Lord is something that's been no longer taught. But believe me, there is nothing more horrible to contemplate than the results of a vengeful God bringing his judgment, not only in America, but on the whole of the Christian world. So pick up the story there, Scott.
Well, yes, Dan, You know, when I was feeling like I'm ready to get back in the battle, I started praying, you know, asking the Lord to use me again. And out of the blue, about 2 weeks later, 2 weeks into that, you know, series of prayers, every morning on my way to work, I was praying that. And then out of the blue, I got a call from one of my supporters up in Sacramento, asked me if I wanted to go to Latvia. And I thought, well, that's interesting, sure. And it turns out that there's a Pentecostal denomination based in Riga, Latvia. It's got churches in 14 countries. It's all Russian-speaking people. Extremely strong, pro-family oriented church that's dedicated to having influence in society, sponsoring Christian political parties in the countries that they're in, working to take power so that they can exercise Christian authority in the countries and prevent some of the things that have happened here in the West. And to make a long story short, I ended up going to Riga to speak in a conference there last summer, and was just blown away by the people that I met there. These are courageous Christians, you know, people that were Christians under the Soviet Union, when you could go to jail for having a Bible in your house, and they've been telling me the stories about how they lived, and they would have to sneak out in the middle of the night and go have church together at 2 o'clock in the morning, and everyone would sort of have to get there by circuitous routes and avoid the spies that would watch at various houses where the Soviets knew the different Christians lived. It's amazing stories. And these Christians who lived under that kind of persecution, these are not just the wimpy, namby-pamby Christians that the church is full of here in America. These are people who know what it means to live under persecution. They're not afraid of the European Union. They're not afraid of the homosexual agenda. They don't care if you call them homophobes. They're not trying to protect their comfort and their property, and keeping their mouth shut. They're not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I was so impressed with them that on the spot I recognized this is what the Lord, the next chapter for my ministry, was to work with these people. They don't know what to do. You know, they're ready to do something. They have a whole army of Christians across all these Russian-speaking countries. And they just, and the homosexual agenda is coming into their countries, really challenging for power, and they want to fight them. They just don't know what the agenda is, how it works, and it was perfect. And I went there and gave a presentation and essentially told them, this is what's going to happen. They're going to do this first, then they're going to do that, then they're going to do that. They're following the same game plan everywhere they go in the world. And I've been studying this for 18 years. I know exactly what they're going to do. I know how they're going to take. They take every single step, and which one comes first, which follows that, and it's a perfect match. And so my wife and I are this week. We're leaving on Friday. We're packing all of our things into storage. We're getting rid of a bunch of stuff, and we're taking off, and essentially going to work with the Christians in these several countries. Teach them how to stop the homosexual agenda there, and then help to work with those Christians to begin rolling it back, rolling back the agenda in the European Union first, and then over here in the U.S. And that's at least the hope that we're going to be able to export a masculine Christianity out of the former Soviet Union into the West.
And because really what they want is to actually produce sexual liberation, as it were. They want to promote immorality, just exactly as Dr. Kinsey, Alfred Kinsey, the University of Indiana, was actually promoting immorality. His scientific work wasn't scientific at all. It was all fraudulent. It was aimed at doing away with the laws against immorality, and then getting people to accept it. That old adage, you know, vice is a monster of such horrible mien as to be hated is but to be seen, but seen too oft, too familiar with her face. We first endure, and then tolerate, and then embrace. And that's exactly what happens here. Notice how Jay Leno and all the other comedians are always making fun about homosexuality, all the things on television about homosexuality. And, you know, it's such nice people, and many of the homosexuals are nice people. But, of course, the agenda itself is not nice.
Yeah, well,
behind that are certainly demonic, truly demonic forces.
When I was speaking recently in Lithuania, I was giving a lecture at the police academy there. And it's so refreshing. Whenever I'm in these countries, I'm invited into the secular universities, the top universities all across the country. I'm welcomed in, and I am thanked by the professors and the students for the message. And I'm not holding anything back. It's just straight out. I'm telling the story of, you know, how the homosexual agenda works, the danger that it represents, and how to oppose it. And anyway, I was in Kaunas, Lithuania, speaking at the police academy, and the leader of the homosexual movement there. It's just getting started, but this politically well-connected person who's a professor at the main secular university there. He came in and tried to shut down my lecture. It's very ironic because the focus of my lecture was that the homosexual movement, the reason that everyone should be opposing it in these countries is that its goal is to silence everyone who disagrees with the homosexual agenda. It is to strip freedom of speech from everyone who dissents. And that's absolutely true. And it's where we're headed in this country. It's already in place in Canada, Sweden, Holland, other places. And this man came in and essentially proved my case that he called me a criminal. He said that he was going to have me arrested at the airport when I left the country. He then went and he filed a complaint against me with the police department for, under the European Union laws, which prohibit inciting hatred against members of protected groups. Unfortunately, they had taped my whole presentation, and the police saw that presentation and knew that he was basically lying to an attempt to get me in trouble. But that's the kind of thing that we're dealing with. In these countries, 80% of the population are pro-family. They're not embracing this agenda. So it presents an opportunity to be able to have some victories. It's been more than 60 years since the homosexual movement got started. I mean, it goes back further than 60 years, but back in the 1940s in this country was when the homosexual movement really began operating. Harry Hay, the Marxist teacher of Marxism for 18 years, founded the Mattachine Society, trained the homosexual activists how to operate in secret cell groups and to work to subvert the moral culture of America. The homosexual political activists were responsible for the rise of the pornography industry, abortion, contraception on demand, attacks on the sanctity of marriage, by pushing this sexual freedom. Kinsey was one of them. He was an in-the-closet homosexual activist. The whole goal was to strip the American people of their morality, of their sexual morality, so that the gays could then come out of the closet and have acceptance, because no one would be willing to condemn them if they were already morally corrupt themselves. This was a deliberate plan that was put in place in the 40s. And for 60-some years now, this movement has been growing and increasing in its power and has knocked down every obstacle in its way. And I believe that what's going to happen now is that they've finally reached a place that they're not going to be able to succeed, and that we're going to be able to begin rolling things back, starting with the former Soviet Union.
Well, I certainly hope you are, and I commend for your courage and tenacity, because it's a thankless job, and we've seen so many people, you know, destroyed. And I know in the film we talked about the gay agenda. Everybody who was involved with the production of that film had their lives destroyed. The minister who put it out lost his church. The other people are certainly, they were all viciously attacked. We're not dealing with nice people. There is behind this a powerful spiritual force. Well, Scott, pick the story up there.
Well, I've been attacked in the past as well, you know. when I was...
I'm sure you have.
When I first got saved back in 1986, I had been an alcoholic and a drug addict for 16 years. I knew what it was like to live the lies of the left. I followed their advice and brought me nothing but pain and suffering. And then in the end, it was only surrendering my life to Jesus Christ that made a difference. I was healed and delivered immediately, instantly, miraculously in prayer, February 1st, 1986. And then I went from there. The Lord gave me a ministry. It took a couple of years for him to get my feet back under me. And then he brought me into the realm of Christian social activism, first with abortion, and then I was shifted over to dealing with the homosexual agenda, because that's really the spiritual warfare of our time. There is no more significant attack on Christianity and anywhere in the world at this time than the homosexual political agenda, and it's even though that's absolutely true, even today with things happening the way they are, most Christians probably would not agree with that statement, only because they don't understand how deep and how significant this movement is in its deliberate attack on Christianity. But the real danger of the homosexual movement is that its necessary goal, in order for the homosexuals to have acceptance, they must defeat Christian sexual morality and replace it with something else. And that means that in every country which is based on a biblical foundation in any part, in any way, has to be transformed into a society that embraces sexual freedom. And that this movement has been working since the 40s to achieve that. Now, most people don't have any idea, they have no idea of how aggressive this movement has been, and that these culture war battles that we're fighting, abortion, pornography, all these things, come from the same source. This is a movement that was driving to achieve a goal of defeating Christianity. And they, by the 70s, they had all these things in place, and then they came out of the closet when so many people were personally morally corrupted that they wouldn't stand against them. And I've written about that extensively, and I feel very confident that the Lord's given me a perspective on this that's very not unique, but rare in the world. There aren't that many people that take this ministry on. But I came out into the world of Christian activism and was very severely attacked, like you were talking about. I had four different lawsuits against me in the early days. $11 million they were the cumulative total that they were pursuing me for. I lost the first lawsuit, and it's what sent me to law school. But I was determined I'm not going to leave this battle. I'm not going to just simply go away. They can't do anything to me. And I believe that the Lord prepared me through all those years, those 16 years of bondage to drugs and alcohol, living under bridges at times, eating in missions, and begging for spare change on the street corners when I was at my lowest.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Scott Lively here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Scott was just telling about, the time when he was an alcoholic and into drugs, and 16 years, sleeping under bridges, eating at missions, begging for change, but God was giving him a good lesson, and God healed him miraculously in one day, and brought him then into the ministry where he is, and as a result, even though at one time he had a number of lawsuits lodged against him by homosexual activists. Why? Because they will try to destroy anybody who tells the truth about the truly demonic forces which are behind this movement, intent upon destroying the morality, not only of the United States, but of the whole of the Christian world. And, of course, so you picked this story up there, Scott.
Well, yes, Stan, it wasn't just the lawsuits. It was intense character assassination. I was the spokesman for the Oregon Citizens Alliance in our ballot measure campaigns, in which we took on the homosexual agenda there in Oregon, which is one of the states that's the furthest along in the process of homosexual domination. In fact, there's some things happening there right now in Oregon that are just horrendous. New law that that may go in to effect, may be passed, that will literally give the government the power to regulate the church, which probably wouldn't hold up under the Constitution, but you never know these days. They came after me with vandalism, with bomb threats and death threats, and you know, I wasn't really worried about that sort of thing. I knew they would never sacrifice their victim status by turning into, you know, overtly at least, into thugs. You know, they're fascists at heart. The homosexual movement is fascist. You know, and I point this out in the former Soviet countries, that and these are people who understand. They're fresh into learning about democracy and what it means. And I'm pointing out to them, look, democracy is allowing different people with different points of view to be able to express themselves, and then the population chooses among the different ideas to select the rules and policies that everyone will live by. But that's exactly the opposite of what the homosexual movement does. It uses freedom of speech and principles of tolerance, etc., in order to get into places of power. And then as soon as they have the power, then they take away those things from everyone else. And they begin to work to try to punish anyone who disagrees with them, who talks about the health consequences of homosexuality or expresses any moral reservations about it. That's fascism. That's not democracy. And that's what I experienced with it, there in Oregon in those early years of my activism. It was like fighting the demons of hell. It was constant, intense warfare, character assassination every day. In one of the major media outlets, there would be some kind of attack, calling us Nazis or the Ku Klux Klan or hate mongers, or you know, engaging in all kinds of different mockery, ridicule, and anyone who dared to stand up against them would face this. And you know, when you're, it's like living in a time when the Nazis are on the rise. Everyone sees, many people see what's going on and don't like the trend of things, but so few will dare to stand up and say anything about it because of the consequences of being bold in the face of an aggressive adversary. It's one thing to stand up and you know, voice your opinion on something that might be unpopular with other people. You know, and there are lots of different controversial subjects that you can engage in. But on this particular topic, that the people that will come out to oppose you, they want to kill you. In Sweden, in 2004, a pastor, just after they passed anti-discrimination laws there, protecting people on the basis of sexual orientation, he was arrested and given a month in jail for preaching against homosexuality from his pulpit in his own church. And that he had to fight that. He eventually prevailed. He took it all the way to the Swedish Supreme Court and prevailed and had the sentence overturned. But the entire time, the homosexual community was vigorously working to try to have the sentence increased. They wanted him to go to jail for a long time for preaching the gospel.
Well, Krista, I'm sure you're well aware of the minister in San Francisco who spoke out against homosexuality. They burned his church down.
That's true, and that is a problem that we have, is that the Christians, those of us who really should have courage, you know, the people who claim the God of the universe as their God and Savior and the power of their lives, don't have the courage to stand up against these other people who are wanting to strip us of all of our rights and to change the entire culture to in their own image.
Amen to that. Hang on there, Scott. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Scott Lively, who is a very, very courageous man, and he's certainly been on the front lines of this battle for a good long while. And whenever you speak out against organized evil, and this is really what it is, this is organized evil to destroy the moral foundation of Christian civilization. Whatever you do that, you will come under not only physical attack, but spiritual attack as well. Because there is a spiritual force that drives this entire movement. Scott's written a wonderful book. It's called The Pink Swastika, which we carry and which we commend to our listeners. We think he's done a great job with that. Well, go ahead. You tell the story there, Scott.
Well, right now I'm working on another book. I've just finished, actually, a book of testimonial stories about the miracles in my life called My Life in His Hands. But the bigger work that really has been the bulk of which I did to earn my doctorate in theology has been a book that currently the working title is A Reasoned Response to the Homosexual Agenda. It's 18 years of my analysis of this movement, you know, the causes of homosexuality, the types of homosexual dysfunction, how the agenda operates step by step, exactly what they do to be able to take power in government, in corporations, in churches, in educational systems. They follow a very specific game plan. They always begin with promoting the idea that homosexuality is innate and unchangeable, the born that way theory. They follow it up with anti-discrimination policies. They push for the laws to protect people on the basis of sexual orientation. Because once that's in place, then it essentially locks their premise into law that homosexuality is an orientation. It is something that is innate and unchangeable, and that it deserves to be protected by society, protected by government. And then once the anti-discrimination policies are in place, then they begin rolling out one after another of different laws that build upon that foundation until they manage to achieve enough power to begin punishing people that disagree with them. There's only a few countries that have gone that far. Canada is one of them. And you know, right now in Canada, there are human rights commissions that, under the law, have if a homosexual sees something in the newspaper or hears something in the community about that
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Scott is telling us about what's going on in Canada. But before we get to that discussion, Scott, I want you to get your telephone number and your website out. If people would like to get in touch with you or perhaps help your ministry, and I think this is a very worthwhile ministry that we all should be supporting, and we've certainly supported in the past. So how can people get in touch with you or get your information or keep in track with what's going to happen as you go over there into the old Russian satellite countries, trying to get people to understand that there is a conscious effort to destroy the moral fabric of society?
Well, the best way to interact with my ministry is through our website, defendthefamily.com. We have a contact form there, which I screen all the emails that come through there. We sell our books there on the site, of course. We take donations on the site. And that every day we post the most important news stories about this issue on the front page of the site. And we have an extensive archive of not only news stories. We have over 3,500 news stories going back several years, broken down into 20 different categories, such as, you know, the business world, religion, etc. We also have an extensive archives of resources that virtually anything that you would want to know about this issue and educate yourself on or educate other people, we have it there. All of my books, all of my articles and things are published there online. And then we have links to virtually every major pro-family organization in the United States there as well. We try to be a resource center for people who still are willing to stand up and tell the truth in the face of this very aggressive adversary of the church.
Well, one of the things I want you to tell us a little bit about what's going on in Canada, but before we do, certainly a Ford Motor Company has an active program of openly supporting the gay agenda. And, of course, there's American Family Association, Wildman's group, which is opposing them and asking for a boycott on Ford. Ford lost, I think, I don't know how many billion dollars last year, but they're simply facing bankruptcy. At times they've said they'll stop their supporting of homosexuality, but they always go back to it, and of course the boycott remains in place. What part do you think the Christian boycott of Ford over their allegiance to the homosexual agenda, what part is that playing in the fact that they are, you know, certainly losing massive amounts of money every year?
No, I think there's a big part. I mean, I certainly am not going to buy another Ford with what they're doing. And it's really an example of how a corporation is taken over by the movement. And this happens to companies large and small. You know, the problem is, from a political standpoint, is that most homosexuals, unless they tell you they're homosexual, they're able to work as secret agents. They can be in the closet pretending to be a normal heterosexual person, and even be advocating for the homosexual agenda, and no one will even know. In fact, they can act like an altruist, or you know, someone that is sort of defending, you know, the, you know, so-called victims, but in reality are activists themselves. They get their people. They always target the hiring positions in a company, a agency that they want to take over. And once they have that person in that position, then they begin stacking the agency or the company with their own people. And then, and usually they're in the closet. You don't know they're homosexuals until they have enough of their people inside the organization to be able to begin to take control. Then they all come out of the closet. They form a gay and lesbian employee association that is really the power block. There's nobody else that can organize like these people. And then they use that employee association to begin forcing concessions from the company. Anti-discrimination policy, once again, is the very first thing that they'll put in place. And then once that's in place, they begin building on it. And then eventually, they manage to take virtual control of the company and begin using its advertising budget, begins going to homosexual-controlled agencies. It begins advocating sort of subtly at first gay themes. Its charitable donations begin going to gay, lesbian youth centers and all the other things that they've managed to put together. And Ford is a classic example of that, which is now sacrificing. And this is the reality, is that they don't care about anything but their agenda. They'll sacrifice anyone or any entity in order to achieve their goals. They're willing to let Ford go down.
And they're willing to destroy America in the process.
Yeah, they're willing to destroy the America itself in order, you know, they're blind to the consequences of their own philosophy, or they wouldn't live the way that they do. But it's a really demonically driven passion to destruction. And Ford is an example of that. In Canada, let me get back to that, because this is very important. This is the future of America under the hate crimes laws that are coming through right now. Canada doesn't have a First Amendment like we do, so it was easier for them to be able to put this in place. But the human rights commissions that they have now, if a homosexual sees, like for example, a letter to the editor in which someone says that homosexuality is not normal or natural, they can take that person and file a complaint against them at the Human Rights Commission. The Human Rights Commission has the power to then take, to require that person to come and defend themselves against that charge. And if they're found guilty of homophobic speech, they're forced to pay a fine. And the fine is then given to the person that made the complaint. It's a recipe, it's an incentivization of complaining about quote-unquote homophobia in the society, and it's guaranteed to silence the people who dissent from their agenda.
And because the thing is, of course, if you were to say something bad about Christianity, you don't have any protection. It's only the homosexuals that have the protection.
That's right. You know, I was even, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, even longer, I was on a radio show out of Toronto about the pink swastika. And that man, I don't remember the host's name, He was then called before the Human Rights Commission to defend himself just for having me on his program. And he had to spend 3 months fighting the charge. I think eventually he was exonerated because it was just simply, Pink Swastika is just simply a historical book talking about actual historical facts. But he ended up spending a lot of money and was subjected to this. In America, we supposedly have protection against that because of the First Amendment. But let me tell you, I just took a case all the way up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, where I represented two African-American Christian women, employees of the city of Oakland, California, who wanted to form a Christian Employees Association after the gays formed theirs. And they put a flyer on the bulletin board, and all it said was that they wanted to discuss the natural family, marriage, and family values. That's all it said. You know, no hate speech, no accusations, no finger pointing, no scriptures even, just that. Natural family, marriage, and family values. The flyer was torn down by the boss, the head of the department, who then sent a memo to all the employees saying that any future postings of such quote-unquote homophobic speech would be subject to termination. We took that to the federal court. We lost at both the district and the appeals level, and the court has ruled that the city employer has the right to suppress Christian speech that disapproves of homosexuality, even the innocuous term natural family. And now that's a complete overthrow of the First Amendment.
Well, could you take it to the Supreme Court if you had the time?
Yes, we are. As a matter of fact, I was just talking today with Rich Ackerman of the Pro Family Law Center, which I founded, by the way, that I resigned from it earlier, or in 2006, to be able to go back into missionary work. But the Pro Family Law Center is taking that up to the Supreme Court. We're going to be working on getting that, all the paperwork done for that. But you know, they only take about 2% of the cases that are put forward, and we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe the Lord will bless us to be able to have this case heard, because it's an excellent case.
It really has nothing to do with whether you're right or wrong, whether it's God's law or not. I mean, we have justices who have a political agenda. It's going to be very interesting to know what their political agenda is in reference to homosexuality.
Well, you know, it's only under Christianity that the concept of justice really made any sense, because a Christian society believes that there's an external moral order. In fact, the whole idea of precedence in cases comes from the idea that a judge was just simply a person whose duty was to sort of, you know, use his intelligence and education to work to discern what the right thing to do was by considering the external moral order that we're all subject to. And that's why you could have a case precedent that would be binding on everyone following, because it was assumed that the judge would have found the just decision, and that you didn't have to go back and revisit it again, because it was sort of, you know, a extrapolation, a conclusion drawn from the order of things. And then the atheists began taking power in this country. They really, the Warren Court then elevated atheism to equality with belief in God and stripped the country of its ability to survive as a Christian nation, because the government under the First Amendment, again, is required to have neutrality toward different religions. And if atheism is equal to belief in God, and government has to be neutral toward both, then it means that government can no longer accept the idea that there is a God who created things and that there's an order that we're supposed to live by. And so the atheists win by default. And that happened in the 40s, the same time period as the agenda, homosexual agenda, was coming forward. But ever since then, our whole legal system has been slowly unraveling, and now everything is, all the legal decisions are really rooted in the subjective opinions of the people that are wearing the robes, not the idea that there is a law above the law we're all subject to, but it's all now just political and subjective. And, of course, there's inertia that takes place. You know, you don't lose your Christian heritage in one, you know, the day after a terrible decision like that. It takes a couple of generations before you're finally stripped of the consensus, the Christian consensus that everyone once held. But we have reached that point now. We're in a post-Christian society. Virtually every gatekeeping position of our society is being held by radical anti-Christians. You know, university, virtually every major university is being headed up by somebody that is that doesn't believe in God, or worse, is a God hater. Every major media outlet is the same way. You know, where are the convinced Bible-centered Christians who believe in the authority of the Bible as a guide to all of life? Where are they in the positions of power?
You're talking about Ted Haggard, former head of the National Association of Evangelicals, 30 million strong, 30 million evangelical Christians, headed by an organization led by a closeted homosexual who was using his position of power to undermine Christianity. And then when he was outed, why, all the Christian ministers said, oh, poor Ted, you know, we're just going to counsel him. This man was there to destroy Christianity and did a great job.
Well, and that's even within the realm of the church. But when you look at, you know, we have a responsibility as Christians to be making disciples of every nation and teaching them to obey all that Christ commanded. That's the Great Commission. It's the one thing that's supposed to bind us all over the world with one single mission. And yet here in this country and in Western Europe, We have been emasculated. We've lost our masculinity as Christians. Now, the idea that Jesus Christ, who kicked over the money changers' tables, you know, and drove them out with a whip that he made with his own hands, you know, where is that Jesus? Where is that concept of Christianity, of conquest over evil, of restoration, of redemption of the society, of destroying evil, fighting the enemies of the flock, going out and killing the lion, killing the bear that would otherwise be attacking the sheep. You know, where is that Christianity? It's gone. And now the whole church is sort of in the nest of the church, you know, focused all on relationships and portraying Jesus as some wimpy, namby-pamby God that has no ability to exercise authority, except as it relates to things that happen inside the building. It's a disgrace.
You're absolutely right. Of course, they've changed the nature of God. I mean, is a God of love, but he is also a God of justice and of judgment, and yes, a God of vengeance. And we never talk about that in our churches today. And because we have lost our fear of God, why, of course, we've lost the moral foundation of our society.
Yeah, that's true, and I'm working on a book now. I'm finishing up the textbook called A Reasoned Response to the Homosexual Agenda, and I'm compiling everything that I've learned over these 18 years into one volume. So if you could only have one book to deal with this issue, and your goal was to be able to restore a family-friendly community or nation, this book would be it. And with explanations of how things got the way they are, how the movement operates, and strategies and very specific action items to take, even down to language that's drafted for ordinances and things like that. That's all in that book. But then following that, I've already started on this book called Masculine Christianity. It's really a doctrine, a doctrine of restoration of for a post-Christian society. And really, when you're looking at the countries of Western Europe, Canada, the United States, we are post-Christian societies. We can't operate by the theology that our grandparents handed down to us, because that was a theology that worked for a majority consensus. We don't have that anymore. We can't afford to be conservatives anymore. Conservatives conserve. You know, they protect the ground that they're standing on. But, you know, we don't have any, we don't want to protect the ground that we're standing on anymore. It's been taken away from us. We have
right.
to have a doctrine of conquest, of going back and taking it back. Take climbing over the seat, pushing the bad guys out of the driver's seat, taking the steering wheel back into our own hands before they drive us all off the cliff.
Well, that's exactly where they intend to go. The destruction of Christian civilization. Scott, let's get your website out, your telephone number one more time.
Yes, and really just communicate with me through the website, defendthefamily.com, and you can reach me by email there and use all of our resources. Please make use of it. And stand strong. Don't be ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is the power of salvation for all who believe.
And of course, it's the only thing we're really going to have to cling to, as things, I fear, are going to get far worse here in America as we move into a time of growing chaos and crisis. Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment, Scott, to wrap up the program. Well, Scott, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Now, if we want to get your books, will we be able to get them? Will there be somebody there who will be handling your books if we
yes,
want to buy
yes.
them wholesale?
We have a streamlined office. We are taking book orders through the website, and we're communicating. If you can get on our email list, we're sending out our emails. The technology today allows me to really run this ministry from anywhere in the world.
Well, that really is amazing. Well, okay, fine. Well, anyway, you've got about now 2.5 minutes to wrap up the program with a message you want to leave our listeners out across America.
Well, what I want to say is I believe that we're going to see some kind of a catastrophe that's going to take place in this country. I don't know how long it's going to take to happen. If it doesn't happen, it could be the worst thing that we could face, because it's only going to be a calamity that is going to wake people up and bring them back to the fear of the Lord, and to bring them back to a place where they're willing to turn away from their comfort and turn back toward morality. And I think that it's important for those of us who are the remnant of the church to be speaking the truth and to be looking toward that day when we have the opportunity to step back into positions of authority again. We saw a glimpse of it right after 9/11 for just a few weeks. Some of it stretched for a few months. But that's I believe we're going to see something more severe happen in the country. And at that point, we need to be ready to step forward and begin to restore, begin to take back those positions out of the hands of the anti-war radicals and the atheists and the homosexuals and others that hate God, that hate Christian morality, and those of us who have stayed faithful to the word of the Lord through this increasing degeneration of our national morality. Those of us who have that, who have stayed faithful, need to be ready at that point to step forward and articulate why we believe what we believe and what kind of changes need to be made to restore the greatness of our nation.
And I think you're absolutely right, Scott. Until some terrible catastrophe comes, nobody's going to want to listen. But we are certainly preaching, and I know you are as well, to the remnant. And that remnant will be here when the crisis comes, and hopefully that will be our opportunity to reach people. They will hear our message as far as salvation. They'll hear our message as far as what liberty and freedom are all about, and why it's so important that you cannot have freedom with an ungodly people. And either we'll be ruled by God or we'll be ruled by tyrants. Have a wonderful and safe trip, Scott. May the Lord be with you on your journey.
Thank you, Stan. God bless you. God bless all your listeners.
Good night. God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, I hope you enjoyed our talk with Scott Lively here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we actually carry a couple of books that Scott has written. One of them, of course, is The Pink Swastika. We have another book he's written, and if you're interested, why, you can always call our 800 number. They could give you the names of the books if you'd like more information on them. We carry a book on Kinsey, Crime and Consequences. We have a new small book on Kinsey, and then probably a 20 or 30 minute DVD that has been put out by certainly a D. James Kennedy, featuring my good friend Judith Reisman. You have to understand how these movements work. We carry an excellent DVD. It's called The Rape of the Soul. It goes into The implants within Catholic art that put up are Catholic, but of course it's a fascinating insight into an organized effort to destroy the moral fabric of the Catholic Church. We carry, of course, the four-tape set. It's entitled Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and of course we also have a book he wrote called Hostage to the Devil. And if you have any doubt that there is another dimension, that there really are demonic forces out there, you need to read Malachi Martin, The Hostage to the Devil. I first read this book about 1980, and I will have to admit it played a very important part in reorienting my thought about what's going on in the world today. And then, of course, we hope many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, realizing you can listen to our programs there on the Internet 3 hours a day. Or you can certainly listen to 2 hours a day, 1 hour a day on AmericanNewsNet.com, another hour on GCNLive.com, and then 3 hours on RadioLiberty.com. And then if that isn't enough time for you, of course, we're on Telstar 5, 9 hours a day. Although some of them are repeat programs, but then you can hear Joyce Riley 9 hours a day. And it's important that people have access to good information. After all, if Howard Stern can, get 5 million people to listen to him, I would think there might be 5 million people who want to hear the truth. We have the ability to get out between Joyce's program and my program, and we hope that many of you want to listen there on Telstar 5. If you need more information on that, you can always call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like information on what you should be doing fiscally to prepare for what lies ahead in the way of for food or for water or for being able to cleanse your water, things of that sort, we do have a health catalog. We do have a long-term food storage catalog. We'd be glad to send free of charge. We have a health catalog. Talks about vitamins and minerals and the books that will help you to know how to preserve your health in difficult times. And we have a regular catalog that has all sorts of information on books and videos and four tape sets that we hope many of you will want to take advantage of, that will help you to better understand the spiritual battle we're involved in. And we really are involved in the spiritual battle. We even still have some copies of that DVD that got us into, I guess it was a video that got us into so much trouble, called The Gay Agenda. And of course it was a classic, a decade or more ago. But it really explained what this is really all about. And that was why, of course, it got such a reaction. They did not want the American people to know what this lifestyle involves. And you have to understand that this is a very unhappy situation. The people who were involved in it die at a very young age. Comparatively, they die 20 years younger than the regular people. If you care about homosexuals, tell them that what they're doing is wrong. And, of course, if they can actually leave homosexuality if they will come to acknowledge the power of God over their lives. And many, many have done this, and their lives have been transformed. Because as Scott said so well, there is a spiritual component to what's going on. We ask you to pray for the homosexuals who are listening in our audience and for homosexuals across America. We ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.